Okay. Are you recording now?
What?
Are you recording now?
I can't lie, yes.
You're so red when you lie. God.
The following presentation is for mature audiences only. It is not intended for children, the oversensitive, or self-righteous gas bags with sticks up their butts.
Oh, well, I'm out. Wait, which one are you? All children are sticks up their butts.
Self-righteous.
Wait a minute, I can say that.
Matt Starnslord.
That's you.
Carol the Cat.
That's me.
The Giddy Geeker.
That's me.
The Technician.
Hi. Paper
Shift, the Time. Here's a program.
One day I'm just
going to
like poke you on
the
side.
And now, damn right they shot first. The hosts of Guardians of the Geek.
Pew. They missed again. We're alive. Okay. Episode 136.
Woo. We're so bad. Very excited to welcome back.
I think
Lindsay.
We're so bad.
I did.
You're damn right we're bad. We're bad.
We're bad.
We got into the geekery. Sorry.
They gave me projectiles. I can throw
I made
them.
Lemonade out
they
of
gave
them.
Us to them to us, too.
Anyway. You we have saying. With us today Dr. Kelly Bolton and Lindsay Stewart, and they're here to promote their upcoming event, Aspicon. So give us the 30-second elevator commercial, and then we will strongly encourage you to go back to episode 135 and listen to more.
And go.
Go, Kelly. Okay, so Aspicon is a really awesome community event that brings together the best of a Comic-Con with the best of a community resource fair, targeted primarily to individuals on the spectrum and their families and those that love them, but anybody else who would love to learn a little bit more about it is welcome as well.
And just to be very clear, Spectrum is not Time Warner Cable. Spectrum is
yes,
autism
right.
to Asperger's disease Asperger's syndrome and lot between.
Thank you between very much. Yes. We don't have enough insurance to take care of that lawsuit if we don't clarify.
Although the moment I saw that they had changed names, I desperately want to get a picture sitting on one of their vans so that I can be on the Spectrum like I am in real life.
It is April 1st.
Yes.
Tickets are currently on sale. Mm-hmm. $20 for adults and $5 for kids 12 and under. Mm-hmm. It's going to have food trucks and panels and cosplay and trivia. And farm animals and all sorts of stuff starting at 9 going until 4 on Saturday.
9:30 to 4 on Saturday, April the 1st at Queen's Sports Complex in the South Park area of Charlotte. Mm-hmm. And to clarify, I didn't do this earlier, if you buy your tickets online before the event, they're $15, still $5 for kids 12 and under.
You can save some money on adult admission.
And the David Finch piece, the pre-con, what we call on Friday night before, with David Finch, those are $30 for individuals and $50 for a couple.
Mm. Nice. And they can find out more by going to aspicon.com, and that's aspiecon.com. Thank you, Carol, for spelling with me.
You're welcome.
I appreciate that.
I'm here to help.
So while we're talking about Aspicon, April 1st, go to it.
Go.
Let's take a minute. We're going to do a new segment, which we're calling Local Events, because it's about events that are happening locally.
See how we are?
We're informative all smart that like way. That. So tomorrow night's March 23rd, and if you're listening to this podcast, it's probably tonight. It's Charlotte Geek Trivia Night. That happens every Thursday night at Fabos. You can find out more by going to the Charlotte Geeks meetup page. Also, if you can't make Fabos, but you're still interested in doing trivia, they have it every week at Thirsty Nomad Brewing, and they've been on the podcast before, and they do a lot of geeky themes.
And tomorrow's theme for trivia is old horror films. So
there you go.
The Frankenstein, Dracula, and Wolfman.
And then on March 24th,
Friday.
Is that right?
Is that Friday? Yeah, that is Friday.
Charlotte Book Club.
The Beers, Bumps, and Brews, I believe.
We have
two book clubs. Right. One is on the first Tuesday or second Tuesday of every month over at Park Road Books. And then we also have Beers, Bumps, and Brews, where they read Goosebumps and they drink beers and they talk about stuff.
Oh, fun.
So make sure to check those out as well. On, and then we have three conventions happening this week. We have Mace West happening out in Asheville. Yep. We have Mad Monster Party happening down in Rock Hill.
Okay.
If you want to go to South Carolina, you can also go to SC Comic Con.
Mm-hmm.
Us locally, we're going to be on Saturday at Abari's birthday bash. And that's going to be starting at 2 p.m. going till 2 a.m. That's over at Abari Game Bar where they're having their one-year anniversary. You can come by and see us outside by the beer truck. Right? Aren't we near the
beer? In between beer and donuts, so they know the geeks very well. Yes. Exactly where to put Matt. They're like, we want Matt to gain 500 pounds this weekend. This is good. This is good.
That's so comfortable. That's like rocking a hard place for you, right?
I'm in trouble, yeah. Bring me carrots. Bring me carrots, Alan. Thank you.
But that's going to be, we'll also have a Wee Geek Girls in that tent. Also that same night, Nirvana, Geektastic
3, an evening of geeky belly dance at the PSI Theater in Durham, North Carolina.
Oh.
This is put on by the League of Extraordinary Belly Dancers, who have been to Con Carolinas previously.
Yay!
I love it.
So that, get your tickets at PSI Theater.
All right. And Sunday's Nirvana up in...
In Raleigh at Legends. They are doing the Goddesses of Geekdom,
cool.
Which is their tribute to all of the goddesses in geekdom. So, and that's at Legends in Raleigh, North Carolina, and that starts at 8.
And if you're looking perhaps instead for a little bit of culture, make sure you go over to the Charlotte Art League. It's their last weekend of their all-female play, women playing Hamlet. Despite how they are dressed, they are all females. And make sure to check that out. That's part of a joint venture between Donna Scott Productions and Chick Spear. So make sure to check that out. And then weekend, we've got three cool things going on. Of course, April 1st, we already talked about AspieCon. But on March 30th, we have the Actors Theater of Charlotte is opening their new play, which is called That Effin' Bird. And it's a bird.
Typo.
It's a take off of the play Seagull. So and then on April 2nd, friends of the podcast Drew Aronica and John Chenoweth, who are been both in Robot Johnson and Montfero, have a premiere of their short film Ambition. So make sure to check that out. And there will be links for all of these events online so that you can find out and know more.
Whoa.
Go and support your local geekeries.
Yes. If you want things to stay open, you must go.
Yes.
Yes.
You must go to them and have the funds.
Okay. That was enough talking from me. So, Tiffany, you went and saw Beauty and the Beast. Tell us about it.
I did.
Doing movies.
Yes.
We're going to go to movies next.
So, I went and saw Beauty and the Beast, and I don't really have a lot of technical things to say about it, except that I really enjoyed it.
You braved all the kids.
No, I went at night.
I was going to say, you went to the 9:30
I went with all the couples.
Didn't you?
So all these people staring at each other's lives lovingly, and Beauty and the Beast, and fuck that.
Lovely, really.
I mentioned that this was the
I was waiting. When is that going to happen? Finally.
The bad thing is Tiffany is probably saying that out loud with the couples around. Like, fucking couples! And they're like, do you mind? I'm trying to rich kiss his wife over here. What's going on?
Go fuck yourself.
Beauty on the Beast.
Now, Lindsay, I saw pictures online.
Yeah.
Pictures online?
Yeah.
Beauty and the Beast? Is that what we're talking about?
Not her effing herself or
Michael. Wait a second.
One of the things that I get the opportunity to do as part of Merely Players with my husband, Michael, we do costume character interactions and entertainment. And one of the things that we had the chance to do was this Saturday, we were over at Regal Cinemas at Stonecrest. And dressed as Cogsworth and as Belle. And getting to meet and greet with everybody, which was a lot of fun.
So Michael was dressed as Belle.
Michael
that's
is Cogsworth.
Sorry.
Oh, come on. He's short, round, grumpy, and British. Of course it's Michael as Cogsworth.
I kind of want to see Michael in a in a bell gown now, though.
He wouldn't fit. It just doesn't. I could make him one, but I don't know how well he'd wear it. But no, I had the chance to get to see the film. I've seen it twice already.
Oh wow!
So you don't like it very much. Not that Belle is one of my obsessions or one of my fandoms at all. I was really excited about it.
Yeah,
I was really excited by it. I was really happy with it. I love that they went through and went, what are some of the things that people have been asking? You know, those silly BuzzFeed polls. What are the things that Beauty and the Beast failed in? You know,
back in 1991
when it came out. They have worked to answer a lot of those unanswered questions, which I love. They have also done a throwback to the original tale by Villeneuve. In fact, they reference the author. That's the name of the village where Belle lives now.
Yeah.
So they've given the name to the village, so it's Villeneuve.
Right.
And so they've referenced the original tale. They've referenced the musical, and they've referenced the animated film. So for Beauty and the Beast fans, there's a lot of great references that you'll catch. A lot of good Easter eggs for lifelong fans.
Do you need to make Michael a new Cogsworth costume now based on the movie?
No.
That's a great
the costuming list gets longer and longer. Do you know the worst part about being subjected to Michael as Cogsworth, though? I don't know how my husband has the never-ending supply of time and clock-based puns, but I listened to it for 4 hours on Saturday, and he didn't at all ease up. He had something for everything. Nice. So yeah, no, Cogsworth is one of his very favorite characters.
It's a special skill set of his.
Yeah.
He cogitates all the time.
He Cogsworthitates.
Yeah. Absolutely. I was working on that.
It was coming. It was coming.
I got the word that I needed to.
Yeah.
So Tiffany, did you like the film as well?
I did. I really did. I loved it, actually. Like, I thought it was very well cast. I thought it was cool that there was a gay character.
Did you catch the gay? Because, you know, everyone was really worried about catching the gay.
Wait. Isn't that the agenda, right? Like, catching the gay?
Yeah. Get all those little kids in there.
I did. I caught the gay. Not totally did not. But
but wouldn't you be catching the gay and liking dick? That's what I asked online. It's like, so do I become super femmy? Or what happens?
Right.
I really need to know.
And they don't be... I mean, it's obvious to people who would know somebody that's gay that the character is gay.
But did you know that
he's not like, hey, I'd like to suck your dick, just in case you didn't know. Like,
it's not like going through his grinder list.
I will tell you that, like, the character development for all of the characters in the film, they've done the most three-dimension work on LeFou.
Yeah.
Truly, he's far more three-dimensional than he ever was in the original animated film. And you get a sense that LeFou is more aware of what's going on than maybe even Gaston's aware of.
Gaston is a silly... goofball.
He is, but man,
really stupid.
LeFou's interactions with him, you see him through LeFou's eyes and not just Belle's, and it's kind of fascinating to see.
Yeah,
I agree. Interesting.
Yeah, very good movie.
Mm-hmm. Really, really good.
Beautifully
movie.
Done.
Okay.
On the other hand, Carol, you went to see the Belko experiment.
Yes,
tell us a little bit about that.
Was taking their children to go see Beauty and the Beast. I went to the little horror film called The Belko Experiment, written by James Gunn, who wrote Guardians of the Galaxy, or directed Guardians of the Galaxy.
It's hard to say galaxy, isn't
it? I know,
it's
hard to get the galaxy instead of the geekery. He didn't write our podcast, he wrote the movie.
He directed the movie.
Maybe
not. He didn't direct our podcast either, that's obvious.
Yeah, he didn't direct this one. But this is, it's a very short film, it's like 88 minutes long.
Oh.
It's an incredibly intense 88 minutes. The story is that a group of American, or actually international workers in a company in Bogota, Colombia, called the Belko Industry, go to work one day, and all of the locals are sent home, and suddenly all these metal barricades come over the windows, and a voice comes over the intercom and says, if you don't kill two people in the next 30 minutes, we're going to kill four. And they all have tracers in the back of their heads that were put in by the company in an effort to keep them from being kidnapped because they are working in Bogota, Colombia. So what they find out, because they don't kill two people, because, you know, you're not going to do that if somebody just tells you, is that the tracers are actually little bombs, and they do actually kill four people by blowing their heads up. It is incredibly, I have to say, it's incredibly graphic.
Mm.
It is a very hard R. So,
like Kingsman exploding heads graphic?
Kingsman did like little rainbows. This is just exploding heads.
Okay. That gives me a point of reference.
So you're talking about scanners?
Yes.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, yes. Gotcha.
Scanners. So like, we're like, which head exploding point of reference do I have?
Kingsman, they look rainbows. No, this was like, okay, brains.
Brain matter.
Because what happens after the four people die is a voice comes on and says, you have 2.5 hours to kill 30 people or we'll kill 60.
Whoa.
And that's 2/3 of the force. And at that, the workforce, at that point, you have people making decisions on what they're going to do. Mm. I thought it was a very interesting social experiment. It's not breaking any originality barriers here. It's a very quick movie. It's very intense. It's very brutal. Mm. I would have changed the ending, and I can spoil it if anyone cares.
Please.
Okay, so spoiler alert for the end of Belko Experiment. Uh-huh. The end of the movie, there's two people left remaining alive. One is the COO, who has killed the most people. And the other is Mike, who's your protagonist, who has killed nobody. And I really wanted Mike to get through this game without killing a single soul. I wanted the COO to fall down an elevator shaft or slip on some blood and crack his head open or something. I wanted Mike to win this by not killing anybody, because his whole point from the very beginning is, we can't be this way.
Right.
Hmm. We can't do this. Do you really think they're going to let any of us walk out of this alive? So, but he does. He ends up killing the COO.
Oh.
And he still wins the game, but I was like, you missed an opportunity here. You really missed an opportunity to actually make the movie mean a little something. And what really pissed me off is he kills him with a tape dispenser because they're in an office. And he kills him by bashing his head in with a tape dispenser. And that's the poster. That's the movie poster. I'm like, you just put the ending to the movie on your poster. So that kind of pissed me off.
Seems like an awfully savage way for somebody who doesn't kill people to kill
them. Yeah. But at the end, all of his friends have died. They don't actually make the 30 people barrier. So 60 people they actually kill. Oh. They get 29. And at the end of 2.5 hours, 31 people are exploded, basically. Oh, so you're basically down to...
Do you ever find out what the point of this is?
It's just... No.
That's annoying. Okay. That's so glad I didn't see this movie.
Yeah.
When did James Gunn write this? Was it
This was prior to... Or? No, this was oh, prior
was,
to Guardians.
I was going
to
say, yeah.
It had been... Studio had greenlit it before Guardians. And then they shelved it for a while. And then, of course, Guardians came out and James Gunn was suddenly, the next big writer. Right. And they said, we still want to do this. Oh. And he said, I'm not going to direct it, but you're welcome to do it. It's very smartly written and it's very well acted, but... It is ultimately unsatisfying because their only excuse, he does meet the people who are behind the curtain, and their only excuse is, we're doing social experiments. And it's like, that's not good enough.
No.
And then, at the very end, it sets up an obvious sequel because they pull back, because they're watching them all on computer screens, and then he walks out and they're pulled back to more computer screens, and you notice that there's probably about 50 different experiments such as this going on. So it wasn't just the only experiment.
Hmm.
To me, it was like, okay, that's a very unsatisfying ending. I was really enjoying the film up until that point because it was very intense, very well written, and very well acted. But the ending just kind of falls apart.
Mm. Oh, boy. Mm.
But if you like some good horror, gore in particular, this is really... it's actually well done up until that point.
And now for some happier news.
Oh.
Deadpool 2? Oh.
Where am I? What?
Okay. Michael Deadpool Shannon? Yeah.
Michael Shannon is now the front runner to play Cable in Deadpool 2. And I love Michael Shannon. I truly do. I think he can do just about anything.
Including a cable box?
And we've seen him on...
Nocturnal Animals, if you saw Nocturnal Animals. Superman, or Man of Steel, if you watch Man of Steel.
Who noticed him, for real though?
I know, really, seriously. Did you, watch Zod. Superman at all? He played Zod. He's a really great actor. He was in a really smart little sci-fi film called Midnight Special last year that I really liked. He's not Cable. He's not.
No, the choice I liked, they were I don't know if it was an official choice early on, but was that the bad guy in Avatar, because he looks like him.
He was also in Don't Blink, or Don't Breathe.
Don't Breathe, yeah.
Don't Breathe.
How old is he? 60?
He's 60, and he
is
cut.
But this guy is ripped.
I can't remember what his name is. I'm going to have to look that up.
Yeah, but he's just like, he looks like Cable.
They
were really
talking about Ron Perlman, who I think would actually be a really good...
Oh, yeah.
Ron Perlman would be an interesting choice. I like Ron Perlman just in general.
Yeah.
I think he's a lot of fun to follow. God, I love his Hellboy.
Sure.
So, yeah.
I've had a mad crush on Ron Perlman since Beauty and the Beast in the 80s.
Oh, yeah. Oh, such awful hair in that.
Yes.
Such bad hair. Stephen Lang.
I think Stephen Lang would be a really good choice because age-wise, he's the appropriate age, and physique-wise, he's appropriate physique. Mike Shannon is just this kind of stringy guy with a Midwestern. It does not strike me as Cable in the slightest.
Yeah, because he didn't even get in really good shape for Man of Steel. He just had that suit on.
Yeah,
and it was weird. Anyway, yeah.
So,
well, cool.
I just want to back up that I had the Beauty and the Beast poetry cassette. With Ron Perlman reading, like, Shakespearean poetry.
So that's an ASMR thing.
Say it again, say it again.
I actually brought it to my college class to have people listen to it. And, of course, my professor being, you know, a hipster English academic person was poo-pooed the whole interpretation. Like, I don't care.
Who cares?
I listen to this to go to sleep.
Look at the clothes they found in the sewers, man. Come on. Yeah. These people are talented.
Yeah. So.
All right.
On a separate movie thing, I know it's not on the list, but Yuengling Breweries is coming out with a butterbeer ice cream based on Harry Potter, and I really want it now.
I just got a recipe for butterbeer today on Time.
I've tasted many different recipes for butterbeer, both alcoholic and non-alcoholic. Yeah. When they do non-alcoholic, it is usually incredibly sweet.
Hmm. It made me have diabetes just looking at the video.
Yeah. this is supposed to be, according to Yuengling, they worked with J.K. Rowling, and it's not supposed to be as sickly sweet as some of the other butterbeers out there. So.
Okay.
Worth a try.
Cool.
I'll be curious to see if it actually has beer in it since it's done by Yuengling.
Well, that just seems like a perfect transition into another British commodity now on television, the Great British Baking Show.
Great.
Tipples.
So it's really called the Great British Bake Off, but apparently somebody has the contract to say Bake Off, and you know, Pillsbury owns Bake Off. So they can't call it that.
We can't have none. Dang it.
I know.
Fuckers.
So there's three seasons available on Netflix, and it is just the most delightful show. Like, everything is done in, like, poppy colors, spring-like colors. They bake in this, like, tent in the middle of a field.
Yes.
And
that old lady, and she...
The old lady, Mary Berry, and Paul Hollywood, and... I only bring it up because I watched two seasons of it back to back and was like really pissed off that the rest of the seasons are not on Netflix. Because it's just it's like so anesthetizing. It really just is. It's like, oh, this is just so comforting. But I bring it up as a recommendation for what you call unicorn chasers. Because if you're watching something on Netflix that's dark, you can quickly switch to the Great British Baking Show, not
For
Bake
example,
Off.
A couple episodes of Daredevil, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
Yes. I understand. when ITV and I watch Gotham, I chase it with Supergirl.
Yes.
There you go.
That is always the order in which I do my DCs.
Yeah. When we had cable, I had to go to, you know, Disney Channel shows, like Wizards of Waverly Place something just...
I promise you, this beats that.
I love the Great American Bake Off. Sue me, Pillsbury. So,
we don't have
the American one, please.
No.
A Great British Bake Off.
Oh, okay.
I was so enthusiastic about my hatred for Pillsbury suing me that I forgot. Sorry.
Wow.
Note to our listeners, Pillsbury has withdrawn all sponsorship from Guardians of the Geek.
I just got my...
And we're no longer allowed to call things precious cinnamon rolls. sorry, Hufflepuffs.
Go ahead.
I would like a Hufflepuff cinnamon roll, please. Thank you.
Okay.
Yes.
I can do that because I'm Hufflepuff and I make cinnamon rolls.
Yay. I have some Mung Fruit
fruit sweetener, if you could use that instead of sugar so I could actually eat it, that would be great.
I will let you know when I have time and energy. I can make some for RavenCon. That'd
be awesome. Yeah. Maybe you could make some Ravenclaw stuff for RavenCon.
It would need to be portable and something that wouldn't get sticky on your fingers to stick to your pages of your book.
Yeah.
It's very important.
That's helpful, pups. We don't care. We'll get goo everywhere, you know, because it's fun looking it off. Yeah. But,
Tibbles, I don't know if Carol heard you. She says she's Ravenclaw, but she really thinks maybe she's Slytherin.
She's really Slytherin. Wow. Although I thought it was funny because they do have a test now where they combine houses.
Yes.
And I'm a Slytherpuff.
Yay, Slytherpuffs are awesome. I have several Slytherpuff friends.
So I like that it wasn't a Hufflerin, it was a Slytherpuff.
Well, because you're more Slytherin than Hufflepuff.
Yeah, I'm more Hufflepuff.
I'm a Ravendor. I hear you.
See, I think that's what I would be as a Ravendor.
Are you a Ravendor?
Because sometimes I get really, in my head. And then...
Yeah, I'm full on Ravenclaw, but the anxiety makes me go, I'm definitely not going to be a Gryffindor. Like, I'm very sure that my anxiety is what kept me from being a Gryffindor.
I'm a Gryffindor when it's for somebody else.
Yes, yes. I am a Gryffindor for other people and a Ravenclaw for myself.
Yeah.
It's so funny because I've been a Hufflepuff for far longer than Hufflepuffs have been cool. Like, we're really cool or something. But way back when they started the Sorting Hat tests, I took this test that had 50 questions, and I fully anticipated getting Ravenclaw. I truly did. And I hit, you are, and it was Hufflepuff. I'm like, what the fuck? And so I took another one. It's Hufflepuff. And then I took just a random generator, and it's Hufflepuff. I'm like, fuck it, I'm Hufflepuff. I don't care.
There you go.
I will puff in your face. Don't you dare insult my Huffle.
Yeah, I consider myself to be the Neville Longbottom of Gryffindor.
So you're a Hufflepuff.
Yeah, you're...
Neville would be a Hufflepuff.
Neville is not. Neville pulled the Sorting Hat. No. Neville pulled the Sword of Gryffindor from the Sorting Hat because he is a true Gryffindor. Because he can stand up to his friends.
He's a Gryffindor.
Gauntlet. Okay. I will throw that one.
All right.
Go
They're throwing up some iron fists here.
Oh, nice.
That's a good transition, iron fist.
So I know that Tiffany and Carol, you've both watched it. I will tell you that Starnes Lord and I got through the first four. Yes.
As did Tiffany. I'm on episode 8. Yeah.
Okay. So good. So nobody's finished it
yet. No, I have not finished it.
And thoughts?
I think the weak link here is Finn Jones. I don't think he's a very good Iron Fist. It's not terrible. It's really not terrible. I'm keeping with the show and I'll finish it. And
yeah. I think, in my opinion... And y'all are welcome to disagree. We've kind of had an embarrassment of riches in good Marvel TV and movies. And I think that it's not a bad one if you compared this to any... If this was a DC venture, we would think this was awesome. But yes, it's Marvel, and so therefore we're a little more critical. I did find myself going another hallway fight scene. Oh, look, now we're going to show how much better they can fight in an elevator because it's an even smaller, more constricted space. But I did find the story interesting.
Yeah.
I also kind of felt a little bit like Danny Rand was, Arrow.
Well, that's the thing.
For real, though.
That, Arrow, DC has Arrow, and, Marvel has Iron Fist. They basically have the same backstory, which is they were...
Taken away
at a very young age and raised by a bunch of
monks. My literal reaction to that first episode was, this is a not as good Arrow. That's exactly how, that guy is not as good looking and not as buff. And, I just find Arrow more interesting. But, for me, taking, as the non-geek, the person that can't, other than Arrow, which I just happened to see a few episodes of, honestly, not comparing it to how it fits into the Marvel lore or anything. I just don't think it's that good of a show. The fighting seems very, especially at first. They got a little bit better, but
he needs to train more.
They were It was like just very fake. Like, okay, so on the count of three, I'm going to go to the left. And then on the count of three, I'm going to go to the right. Like, that's how it felt, just very
stilted. But I do think Yeah, but I do think the side characters, like Colleen Wing, are much more compelling characters.
Yeah.
That's the dojo owner. Yeah, I thought she was pretty good. I feel like the villain brother is not good looking enough for me. Like, I just
can't. You are
so
shallow.
I can't. I couldn't get behind this show as much as I wanted to, but I didn't hate it. I obviously watched a few episodes, but.
Yeah, I don't hate it. And I think it was necessary because Iron Fist is a member of the Defenders and they're doing the Defenders next. So they kind of had to set up his backstory. I think this one didn't need 13. I don't think it needed 13 episodes. I think they could have gotten away with even the 7 or 8 that I've watched. But they feel the need to do the whole.
I will say the end of episode 3, which we had said would be our last episode.
Cliffhanger.
We had to watch episode 4.
So it's not terrible. It really...
No, it's very watchable.
It's like the most...
It's very watchable. Yeah, it's just...
Not terrible. It's just...
We've had an embarrassment of riches.
Yeah.
We've had better.
And I think this is getting a lot of flack because it's a white guy doing martial arts. And that's the character. Yeah. You can't...
They didn't whitewash a character.
No.
This character was always white.
Was always this way.
Yeah, and Roy Thomas, who was the co-creator, just... He hadn't watched the show and he was hearing about the backlash, and he's like, yeah, we wrote him Caucasian. He goes, you're welcome to create your own character if you like. I mean, that was his basic response. He's like, he wrote that back in the 70s. I mean, it wasn't, you know, it was just a guy. I mean,
That was back when everybody was kung fu fighting.
Yeah.
I mean,
I did have that one moment where he goes up to Colleen Wing and he says, do you teach any karate classes? Where I wanted to go back to our personal history of, I know a special kind of karate. So we went to a con one time.
Is he going to listen to this?
No. I'm not saying names. We went to a con one time, and there was a gentleman there who I knew by proxy. He had dated somebody who was in the Charlotte Geeks, and I happened to say hello because we were at a table trying to draw attention to our event.
Right.
And he then went on to tell us that he wasn't dating the girl whose hand he was holding, but she felt more comfortable with him, and so he held her hand, and that he was one of 5 Americans who knew this special kind of karate, and basically it came along to the River Tam, I can kill you with my mind kind of thing, and he was dead serious.
Oh, yeah.
And so when he was like, I could open him and teach some karate classes for you, I was like, is that you? But no, I think the first couple episodes, he looks like every other UNH student I knew in the 90s with the deadhead, the deadhead hoodie. So, yeah.
But the interesting thing is like everybody was so taken aback by his appearance, but I'm like, he looks like any other tech guy.
I know.
Like,
I mean, it's not like
he could be a billionaire tech guy. Totally.
They obviously had a nice barber at the monastery.
Yeah.
Because he's well-groomed.
His beard got a little shorter when he got made over.
Yeah.
But
I think Finn Jones was also in Game of Thrones, and he played a kind of whiny, pouty-faced character there, too, until he was blowed up.
Spoiler alert.
Oh, come on. That season's been over for a while. We're waiting for the next one. He got killed by wildfire. Along with all the other
titles. I've only seen the first episode of Game of Thrones. How could you? All right, go
ahead. And he kind of comes across as whiny and pouty in this one, too. And it's just kind of like, maybe that's just his thing. He's
Be
whiny
my
pouty.
Family. Hey, guys.
I actually liked it. And it does kind of combine 2 different legends of the Iron Fist together, which, I mean, if you have 30, 40 years worth of history, you might as well cherry pick the best of the best and not just do one story. But I think that the way they tie in the hand is good for the overall arc, and I'm curious to see where they go with that into Defenders. If they make it to the Defenders. But the only thing that really got me, and I was telling Carol this before, was when Danny hugged Meacham, the father, and was just like, I thought he was just joking, like, oh, you know, like, he just immediately, like, accepted this guy who's been trying to kill him for all 3-4 episodes, and I'm like, Wait,
but
what?
It wasn't him. It was just, that was Ward.
Yeah, it was like he was behind it, and it's just like he just immediately like, oh, cool, this is normal. You're this guy living up in this tower, and you never come out.
You're dead.
And, yeah. You visited me in the psych ward. And
I do think it's interesting that they have to use a hand scan to get in there, and it's the
Anyway. We'll see where it goes.
All right. So Samurai Jack. Let's talk about a different kind of kung fu fighting.
Yeah. So Jack is back. I've watched the first episode of season 5. This is supposed to tie up the entire series, which is nice because the Samurai Jack fans have just been like begging for the last season for a very long time. It's Samurai Jack. So he's in the future. It's 50 years past the last episode of Samurai Jack. Aku is gone. So, and he's fighting the seven daughters of Aku now. But it's the same voice actor doing Jack, which I loved. It's the same animation style, which I love. I love Genndy Tartakovsky's animation style. And it's just really nice to have Samurai Jack back. So I'm happy. I'm happy. Yay. I'm looking forward to it, to the rest of the season. Watch it. It's really good.
Watch it.
It's fun.
Yes.
All right. So let's talk about something that we can all talk about, which goes along with our AspieCon guests. This week was announced that Sesame Street is introducing a new character, and it's not another Elmo, thank gosh. But we were told a little bit about it. And why don't you talk about it a little bit?
Yeah, so we're getting a new female Muppet on Sesame Street, and her name is Julia. And what makes Julia amazing and unique and wonderful is that Julia is on the autism spectrum. And so what I'm finding really exciting about this, Sesame Street is always trying to find ways to help children understand the world around them and to work with difficult situations or unusual situations or unexpected situations. You know, they haven't shied away from talking about the big issues. You know, when the actor who played Mr. Hooper passed away, they didn't replace Mr. Hooper. They used it as an opportunity to talk about death and grieving.
Yeah.
Julia is going to be an opportunity to know how to be a good friend. Julia is a young Muppet. She's four or five.
Yeah.
She's one of Elmo's friends. And Elmo, in kind of an interesting way, ends up sort of almost interpreting for her with the other Muppets on Sesame Street. Her puppeteer is a mother of a young boy with autism. And so she has personal connection and experience with the spectrum. And the moment that this announcement was made, my Facebook blew up. They went, oh, look, it's a redheaded autistic Muppet. That makes me think of my friend Lindsay, because I am also a redheaded autistic Muppet. So I was very excited to see some representation being handled in a really neat way. It's kind of fascinating. When Big Bird greets Julia for the first time, Julia doesn't respond. And Big Bird worries that Julia doesn't like him. And Elmo says, no, Julia has autism. She does things at a different speed than we do. And so we're going to learn Julia's speed. And it's like, okay, this is kind of amazing. So, I'm excited. I'm really excited about Julia.
I have a niece that is now a teenager, for a long time, and I don't know even if she is still now, in my sister-in-law's eyes, diagnosed. She was born with water in her ears. Mm-hmm. She couldn't hear properly and different things like that. But she was able to go to a wonderful school that specifically focuses on needs of all children. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't just one kind of special need. It was just anybody who maybe learns differently or has different challenges. So it might include somebody. It was started by a man whose daughter was in a tragic fire accident and so didn't have hands to do the writing and didn't have some of the communication abilities. And he just wanted to do it for all levels. So whether it might be somebody who may be mentally challenged or impaired in some way, or maybe somebody who just has dyslexia to a severity that would not allow them to mainstream, where they teach them life skills and other things like that. But my niece is one of those individuals that you can say hi to her, but you need to let her approach you at your speed.
Yep.
And absolutely. And so if you focus on her or try to say hi, like when you first walk into a room, that's not going to work. And she may remember you or she may not, but she'll come up and give you a hug and not look at you and be like, hey, I love you. And,
yeah,
you know, and you just have to accept it. Don't try to go back. You have to let her do it at her pace. And so it would have been great at her age to be able to do that, but just to be able to relate. And she does has that obsessive qualities. Like if we watch a movie, she constantly wants to know, Little House on the Prairie, are they wearing socks or tights underneath there? And that's her question the whole time. She's very detail oriented.
Yeah.
But she also can play the concentration memory game like nobody's business. And she has a way of winning games that we're just like, I don't even know what to do with you. So we love her a lot. But yeah. So great that that's out there, and definitely something that I think Sesame Street is something that's near and dear. And I'm so glad that it's not devolved into something commercial.
Yeah.
That they're still striving for the educational standards they had before.
Yeah. Even though it was bought by Disney, it still...
Yeah.
Because the Muppets were bought by Disney.
Yes, they were.
Mm-hmm. But it's maintained its educational integrity.
Yeah, the integrity there.
So, awesome. All right, so speaking of integrity, let's go on to my favorite subject, which you've all been dreading all night. Dancing with the Stars premiered on Monday. So I know.
Were all there the stars? Did they dance?
Yeah. Well.
Define stars. Some close to dancing.
Yeah.
Some close to stars.
Yeah. There was definitely some painful dances on stage. And it was interesting because I accidentally tried to live tweet with Carol, who's like, what the heck are you talking about? I was in the wrong text window. It was supposed to be for my friend Chrissy, who actually watches it with me. She was like, what are you talking about?
Yes, she does.
So this season, they do two seasons a year. One season, maybe they'll do 12. And the next season, they'll do 14 or 16 people because they have more time to play with. So this is a 12-celebrity season. The seasons range from Charo and Mr. T to Chris Kattan to Olympic medalists Simone Biles and Nancy Kerrigan, and as well as Rashad Jennings and David Ross, who are athletes. Well, and the Olympic medalists are athletes too, obviously. And then, of course, you have to have somebody from The Bachelor, somebody from the Housewives franchise.
You have to.
The
Bachelor I get because ABC and Disney and all that.
Yeah, but you know, sometimes the Housewife people, they're just whiny. They're scary. That's what they're on, a reality show to whine, and then they come on. But she was not terrible. But so obviously we're dealing with 12 people. The things that impressed me is... I knew there was a cast member from Glee. I hadn't really watched since the first couple seasons, so I didn't know. I didn't recognize the name. But if you watch even the first season of Glee, it was Brittany, the cheerleader, blonde and bisexual and the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And she was originally hired by Glee just to be a dancer and a singer, and then they gave her one or two lines, and all of a sudden it was kind of like the Dave Bautista Guardians of the Galaxy moment, where they're like, wow, she actually can deliver the lines we give her. And then they went beyond that and said, wow, she can actually do some acting. So I was really excited it was her, because she had left. She's become a mom and the whole nine yards. So she actually, and I think it's she actually did well. It's one of those situations where it's like, well, you were Beyonce's backup dancer, but that's not the same as ballroom dancing.
So
they had to emphasize that. But same thing with Nancy Kerrigan. She danced beautifully, but, you know, she's a figure skater. She's used to being able to glide on one skate, and now she has to move her feet. And so sometimes she was a little bit choppy trying to get to the place. Her lines and her arms, and I'm waving my hands about, were beautiful, but it was that. So there were a couple that I wasn't expecting. There was a guy, David Ross, who's won two World Series. One is the Cubs and one is the Red Sox. I thought he was an older guy, and he actually danced really well.
Yeah.
He really has that dad danced down. He did really well. Chris Kattan, Saturday Night Live. He'd broken his neck, and I forgotten that.
It's a little rough.
Yeah.
And they started off with him doing the night in the Roxbury. Well, imagine a guy doing a head bob because he got back surgery.
And I don't know if it's just because they have the they have this promo reel before that like pulls your heartstrings, but because of that, I don't know if it was just he actually does look like this, but it looks like his head is like lower on his neck. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't know if that's just a mental thing. As soon as I knew it, or what? I guess it actually was. But I was like, oh, that just looks painful for that. I mean, I know it's been a while. Yeah. But it's just.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well,
I can't imagine your neck. Oh,
and
my
God. You end up with fused vertebrae.
Yeah.
And a lot of
the challenge is really they bring on the comedians because they expect them to have the funny lines. And when they had Tommy Chong, you know, he was just hilarious. Even with Jeff Foxworthy and Bill Engvall and stuff like that. Chris Kattan is a different kind of funny. He's not necessarily the quippy stand-up comedian funny.
No.
He gave us great characters on Saturday Night Live. But he also, and we talked about this because I make Matt watch it with me,
I love it. Here's my favorite part, though. I'll probably embarrass Joey, but so I watch her watching it.
Yeah.
And she'll also see her head start bobbing. And then I see the smile, and then I see her foot start moving, and I'm like, she's dancing. She's in her head. She's doing the whole thing, and it just makes me so happy. And like that's what I love about that show.
Right now with my feet.
Yeah, that's why it just hits my heartstrings.
Well, and I like to see somebody do well.
Yeah.
Reality shows where it's just about bitching behind each other's backs and all that stuff, but anything where you have to put an effort in, Project Runway, Dancing with the Stars, something like that, where you can cheer for people. Baking. Exactly. No, but truly, these are my shows. If you're going to have a competition show and people are putting in effort, especially people who are fish out of water reality shows, you know, like a Dancing with the Stars is, then that's the show that I get invested in because I think we all need to put ourselves out on the line every once in a while.
So. And I will say it's the most unique show that I see where even though it's a competition show and they're trying to win the mirror ball and thus it's like, there's no real backstabbing.
Right.
There's none of this. Even like the cooking shows, they'll be like talking smack about the other person. I'm like, it's a cooking show. You're cooking. So, but with this, it's like they go and hug each other afterwards. And they're holding it. By the end of it, they're holding hands like, oh, I hope I don't get voted off. I hope you don't get voted off. I hope you don't. And it's like, it's amazing because it's like, it's a truly positive show. Whether you like it or not, you have to say it is a positive experience. And it's that's kind of rare on TV, I think, right now. So it's,
you know, I think there's some definite standouts. There's definitely two camps, people who can dance and people who are trying really hard. but
Charo is still my favorite.
Charo is...
Just because it's Charo.
No, Charo was hilarious. Yeah. She didn't score well, but she was like threatening to come after all of the judges because they all talked about how much they loved her and then they gave her fives. And she was like, what?
Tom Bozeron was holding her back physically. She was like, I'm
watching you. And she did the hands from her eyes to their eyes because that's audio and you can't see me doing this. So she was hilarious.
She's a great personality.
Mr. T was like, I'm not a dancer. But he tried so hard, and he just had to, like, smile for that. And he danced to the A-Team theme song, so.
Came out of the back of the van and stuff.
Oh,
there you go. So he did good. So, you know, he's like, so anyway, so it was great. I will write more about it as I go along. You don't have to listen to me every week talk about it, but I'm glad it's back. So.
Speaking of glad it's back.
Yes!
Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Yes! It's coming on my birthday.
April 14th. Woo-hoo. New season is on Netflix. Joel Hodgson is back as a writer, but none of the old cast is technically coming back. You'll have Crow.
New crew.
A new crew. Jonah Ray will be Jonah Heston, and he will be on the Satellite of Love.
Yeah.
And then Felicia Day and Patton Oswalt will be Kinga Forrester, who is Clayton Forrester's daughter. And Patton Oswalt will be TV's son of TV's Frank, which I absolutely love. So I'm really looking forward to this. I was like cringing until they announced the cast, and then I was like, okay, I'm happy now.
Well, and the other thing too is what I've heard, because Jonah Ray is sometimes on the Nerdist, and so he's been on there talking about it some of the times, is the amazing amount of cameos that will be throughout the season. The old cast, a lot of them are returning, and a lot of other people. Yeah. And Chris Hardwick's like, I wanted to be on. He's like, dude, your schedule
is ridiculous. So, so that was pretty
excited
cool.
about Patton Oswalt.
Yeah, I am. I saw him live. I saw him live, and he was just so amazing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm really, when they announced Patton Oswalt as TV son of TV's Frank, I was like, yeah, I'm in. I'm totally in.
Yeah. So.
So that's April 14th on Netflix.
So that's April 14th on Netflix. Can't wait. And my birthday's also April 14th, so feel free to send stuff over. But anyway, that's not going to happen. We never got our Pearl and Twin sweater sets, did we?
We didn't.
We didn't. Anyway, so speaking of hyperbole and a half.
Yeah. We were speaking of hyperbole.
Yeah.
So Hyperbole and a Half is a book by Ali Brosh. You've probably seen her crude cartoons on her blog, if you've ever seen someone, the meme going around, going, all of the things!
Oh, yeah.
That is her cartoon style. It's very crude drawings, but this book is kind of a mixture of her drawings and her bout with, her talking about her bout with depression and her very special dogs. Or one is very special, and the other one is helper dog, who doesn't help anything but special dog. So it's actually a really quick read. It's very funny. I love her cartoons because I can't draw for shit, and it makes me happy to see somebody who can't draw and actually do a cartoon.
But she expresses.
She's very
those
expressive.
Crude drawings. So much.
I know.
So,
read it. It's Hyperbole and a Half.
Cool.
Which is also the name of her blog. So you can find her.
Simple.
Yeah, her blog at hyperboleandahalf@blogspot.com.
Blogspot.com.
We might need a link for that.
Yeah, well.
Because it's a lot of
that's
dots.
Not going to happen.
It's a lot of dots.
Not I'm already doing all the
just,
local adventures.
Just Google dot. Google hyperbole and a half.
Good.
It will,
all right.
It will take you there.
And Matt, you were going to talk to us about a few comics?
Oh, yeah. So, if you might be like me, you haven't read Amazing Spider-Man in a while, which is my favorite character, so it's kind of weird, but I really didn't like the direction they were going for the first 24 issues of the new relaunch, which is relaunch.
Is that where they erased his entire history or something? Or?
They made him rich, so now he owns... He's like,
sounds
yeah,
good.
So...
It's like every other Playboy billionaire.
He's basically like Tony Stark.
teenage Tony.
Yeah, well, he's grown up in this scenario. Anyway, but... So this is a cool jumping on point because... You see things start to crumble, and Norman Osborn is back, and there's a new artist, Stuart Amoman, who is just freaking incredible and detailed. So this is a good time to jump on, but I think what they're going to do, probably to tie in with the movie a little bit better, even though this Peter Parker isn't a teenager, they're going to tear down the Parker Industries and get him back to the more of a street-level character, which is he's always been a hero, street-level hero.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty excited about that. So. And then there's another comic. This one's an indie comic. It's Radio Gaga. And it's a guy named Chad Lambert, who is actually a radio DJ in Cincinnati. And these are true stories. And it's a little anthology of them about his radio days and then these crazy experiences he had. He actually ended up working for Gary Parsons for a while. So it's pretty interesting if you ever wanted to know kind of the behind the scenes of radio. Before corporate America completely bought it and gutted it.
Does Queen show up since it's Radio Gaga?
You'll have to read it and find out. Dun dun dun. And it has nothing to do with Lady Gaga, which I'm really thrilled about, even though I like her. So.
Well, she is named after the song.
Yeah.
Yes. So, but yeah, it's fun. And incidentally, there's a tie-in with Chad Lambert, the creator, and Spider-Man. He met Brian Michael Bendis, who used to write Ultimate Spider-Man, and they actually worked in his likeness into some Spider-Man issues of Ultimate Spider-Man. So, kind of interesting.
Nice.
So,
that's cool.
You can make friends at cons and wind up in a comic book, for Pete's sake. So,
Or get married,
yeah.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
I have no idea. We were in different rooms. We didn't meet.
Different
so.
Rooms. Yeah. Sliding doors. Yep,
any books, TVs, or movies you want to talk about,
yeah.
Dr. Kelly? You have been nodding your head for 45 minutes.
I'm just listening. Just listening. I don't have a lot of reference to all of this. But it's very interesting.
She's psychoanalyzing all of it.
No. I leave it at the office, I promise.
That's so good.
Cool.
So, Carol has a special announcement. If your name is Charles
B. If your name is Chuck B. anything, watch your back, man, because it is a bad week for Chuck B's.
Oh, boy.
Yes. We lost two this week.
Chuck Berry.
Yep. Berry. Yeah.
The
yeah.
The rock star.
Well, Johnny B. Good.
Johnny B. Good. I don't know if you consider
Back
him rock.
Back to the Future.
Yeah. I'm sure his cousin Marvin is desolate.
Yes. But, he actually, you know, he pioneered the whole sound.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and,
he did.
That Johnny B. Good and a bunch of other songs that are fleeting from my mind right now. But, so, he was older.
Yeah, he was 92, I want to say.
I want to say my grandfather was a fan of his, yeah.
And then our second one that we lost yesterday, Chuck Barris from the Gong Show. He was also a spy.
Possible CIA agent.
So
maybe in his own mind.
But he also pioneered the dating game and a couple other things. So, you know, definitely people who helped form our worldview as far as TV and music went. Mm-hmm. So if you're Chuck B.,
just watch your
careful.
Back. Just watch your back.
Yeah.
So, but other than
more
that,
like is Chuck B A R because man, both of these B A R.
No, Chuck Berry isn't Chuck Berry B E R.
I'm gonna check. Did we spell?
Don't look at me like that, Tiffles.
Easy guys.
All I'm just saying.
On the podcast.
It is okay. So Chuck Berry is like strawberry, and Chuck Barris is like Ferris or like Ferris.
Yeah, and if you're Barry Charles, be careful too, because who knows?
If you're
a twisted little hand of fate.
That's right.
But whatever you do,
a twist. The universe has it out for you.
It's crazy.
So whatever you do, whatever is going on in your life, make sure to check out our local events, especially AspieCon on April 1st. And not only attend it yourself, but tell your friends about it, because we are all about supporting new ventures, especially ones that help out the community. So make sure to check that out. It's A-S-P-I-E-C-O-N. Dr. Kelly, not too scared. You'd come back again?
I would come back.
Okay.
In a heartbeat. Tomorrow.
I would come back.
Just so that you could tease so-and-so about all the cool stuff in the Geek Gala headquarters.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I will have.
And we didn't even show you the magic trash can where you wave your hand.
Show you that.
Have to check that out.
Oh my gosh.
And Lindsay, always good to see you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
And aside from AspieCon, where else might we see you next?
Mm-hmm. I am probably going to be down at SC Comic Con this weekend in my Batwoman, in my alter ego Callist cosplay. I will be at AspieCon coming up, and then. Other things I've got upcoming are usually with Charlotte Comic Con and Con Carolinas.
So, yes!
I know! Yay! I'll be in costume all the time, so.
All costumes, all the time.
All of the things!
Yes. All right, and on that, Carol, push that button.
Thank you for listening to Guardians of the Geekery.
You're welcome!
For more information, go to guardiansofthegeekery.com.
What's it?
Find us on Facebook.
I thought it was fun.
facebook.com/guardiansofthegeekery. And on Twitter.
Sorry, Chris.
At CLTGOG. Music used by Guardians of the Geekery, Lock and Load, and A Day in the Sun by Jens Kilstofta. Licensed under Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International.